your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Cheeks and warm the heart, but tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Well, merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Tonight we're going to enter the realm of the shadow with my guest, Mike Ricksecker. Now, Mike is the author of many historical paranormal books like Ghosts of Maryland, Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma, Campfire Tales, and several others, and he's appeared on multiple television shows and programs as a paranormal historian and shadow figure expert, including Animal Planet, The Haunted, Travel Channel's The Alaska Triangle, Discovery Pluses, I think that's what you say, Pluses, Fright Club, and more. He produces his own internet shows, Ghosts and Legends, Paranormal Roads, and Friday Night Ghost Frights. On Tuesday nights, he's the host of the Edge of the Rabbit Hole live stream show and Beyond the Shadows on the Haunted Road Media YouTube channel. And Haunted Road Media is also his own paranormal and supernatural publishing company representing a number of paranormal authors. Now, I could keep going on, but if I did, I'd be saying goodbye to you instead of hello, because there's so much more you could say. But with that in mind, let me just say that tonight we're going to be talking about his book, A Walk in the Shadows. And for those of you in the chat room, feel free to ask Mike questions or share your thoughts. And if you're not in the chat room, come join us at paraxradionetwork.com. Mike, I think it's safe to come out of the shadows now.
Thanks for having me back, Marla. It's been a long time. And you are one of those Haunted Road Media authors, too.
Well, yeah. I don't talk about myself. But yes, and thank you for making me one or helping me be one or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Soul Connection is a great book. Everybody has to go get that.
Yes, they do. Thank you. They won't listen to me. Maybe they'll listen to you.
Right.
Well, before we get into your book, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your recent trip to Egypt. And did you happen to see any shadow mummies in the pyramids?
I can't say that I saw any shadow mummies, but I was, you know, on the lookout for, references to shadow entities, because they do go back to ancient Egypt. Well, even, before, you see, references to them back in ancient Sumer and really all over the world. So that was something we did discuss. The couple of tombs where you see those references, we actually, those weren't on our itinerary, but there are so much other things that we were exploring there. It was absolutely amazing.
It's got to be. And I think they showed up in hieroglyphs also, the dark, shadowy kind of things, symbols.
Yeah, absolutely. The ancient Egyptians believed in seven different parts of the souls, and one of those was the shadow, or what they called the kabit. So you do see depictions of those. There's a great one in the Tomb of Horenifer, which is at the Theban necropolis. He's one of the nobles. And you see the shadow there, basically right by the depiction of the tomb, so that the shadow's supposed to stay here and roam on Earth. And you see the bob birds flying off into the afterlife.
I mean, there's so much history in Egypt. And I was asking, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, but I was talking to David Wells, medium, used to be on Most Haunted, and he's now doing astrology. Anyway, he was in Egypt, And I got to thinking about it. Do you think that there's a shelf life on spirits? You know, because, I mean, we see spirits that are current. We see spirits that, you know, maybe were in, you know, 100 years ago in Gettysburg or something like that. But do you think that spirits hang around hundreds and hundreds of years, centuries and centuries, or do they just vanish, or do they reincarnate? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, as far as you know, human spirits, I think at some point they do go on, or they reincarnate, because you don't really hear about, you know, too many human spirits that have been hanging around for thousands of years. Now, you know, other spirits that are not actually human, or they may even be interdimensional in nature, you know, some of those are certainly lingering around, and some of those would certainly be the shadows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, you know, certain things do have a shelf life. The mummy, the old Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians are probably one of them. Some people see dead people. And while you might see dead people as well, you also see shadow people. And the first time you were like pretty young. And what did you think? What did you, what went through your mind when you saw that? Because we were like 13 or something?
Well, I was 13 when I saw the second one. The first time that I saw one, I was 8. Or thereabouts. And, you know, basically, this was something that happened in the middle of the night. I did not know anything about shadow people or shadow entities at the time. I thought there was an intruder in the house, and it was about to kill me. You know, there's, I just didn't have any context like I do now. You know, it was just, there's a tall figure in the room. I can't see exactly who it is. Would, you know, certainly was not one of my parents, and you know, my sister was younger than I, so she would have been shorter. So yeah, I thought there was an intruder in the house, and it was going to, you know, come up and kill me. I'd seen enough movies at that age where I figured I had enough time to gasp, and you know, then I was a goner. but I'm still allowed to tell the tale, which is great. It did do something very unusual, though. It did get physical with me, and what it did, you know, I'm trying to scream. You know, seeing this thing, you know, my mouth is wide open, but nothing's coming out because I'm just too terrified. And it approached my bed, came right up to it, leaned over. I'm staring into this dark, blank face. There's no eyes, no nose, no mouth, nothing. And it took me by the wrists, crossed my arms across my body, and then it ran off down the hall and, of all places, into a closet. So by that point, I found my voice, found my legs, ran off screaming to my parents' bedroom, and you know, very nice, kind and parents, and they consoled me and, you know, tried to tell me that I had just had a bad dream, but you know, I knew I'd been awake for this whole thing.
Wow. And that's interesting, because I've never heard of, I mean, I don't know that much about shadow people. I've talked and had guests, but I didn't think that there was any sort of that kind of interaction between them.
Yeah, it's not common. They can get physical. There's, I don't know, maybe a handful of stories over the years I've collected in which they have gotten physical like that with people. In most cases, they just kind of stand there and stare, and they're more of the watching and observing kind, you know, or they might just simply be walking through the room or dashing down a hall or something like that. But on occasion, yeah, they do get physical.
You know, my guess is that shadow people are called that rather than shadow ghosts or shadow puppies, because they take on a humanoid form. But nobody actually knows what they are, and we may never know. And the one thing that you are sure about, though, is that they do exist. So was those two encounters what really made you kind of get into the study mode about shadow people? Or did it take a few more encounters before you decided to delve deeper?
Well, I mean, I was pretty young at the time, so it wasn't necessarily on my mind at the time that, okay, I had these encounters, I'm going to research. And I was in a small town anyway, and I was fairly conservative. But I did have my first little paranormal investigation at about 15 years old. And so, you know, I did, you know, following that, you know, with the incident that happened there, which was, you know, basically my friend David. As we were investigating this house, we had no idea that's what we were doing at the time, but we were. And he had put his hand flat to this wall in this bedroom, and he turned this bright, bright red and started sweating profusely. And I'm looking at my friend like, oh my gosh, you know, I've never seen anything like this before. And that was kind of the moment that, you know, I knew that I was, you know, truly fascinated with the subject, and that some way, shape, or form I'd be involved for the rest of my life. I just didn't know how until, you know, years later. And, you know, and I tell people I've been involved some way, shape, or form since that time. And a lot of it early on was research, because I didn't know much. You know, it was kind of one of those where, you know, I'm watching the movie The Sixth Sense and, you know, becoming familiar with, you know, what EVPs are. You know, he's playing back the cassette tape. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, or, you know, mid-90s and the World Wide Web is starting to expand and blow up, and, you know, started connecting with people and going on, you know, internet forums and groups and things like that, starting to network and get more familiar. But, you know, my interest really started to, as far as like the investigative portion of it, really started to take off in the mid-2000s when I was contracted to write my first paranormal book, Ghosts of Maryland. And as I started, you know, collecting more stories, and I had, you know, of course, like I said, interacted with a lot of people beforehand and heard a number of different stories, it was like, okay, this is, there's something to this shadow phenomenon. Because I've had experiences, I've heard from people over the years about their experiences, getting these historic stories about shadows. Okay, what's going on here? So I started doing, you know, presentations on it. I started with, you know, presentations on, you know, Ghosts of Maryland. But then people kept asking the questions about some of the different, you know, shadow encounters. And so it was like, okay, this is an area of research that people are very interested in. And so, you know, my research really started to stem and develop out of there, and finally culminated now in the book, A Walk in the Shadows. Mm-hmm. And of course, my docuseries, The Shadow Dimension, where I'm actually going to locations in search of this phenomenon.
Yeah, and you know, it's like building a field in a cornfield. When you ask it, when you build it, they will come. And when you go looking for them, they will. It's something really interesting about that. Got a question from the chat room. She said, I was told shadow people were black ghosts, their term, that they usually kill you, but white ghosts don't usually hurt you. What is the origin of that?
Well, for one, they're not going to kill you. And that is something I get a question, okay, can a shadow entity or a ghost kill you? It's like, well, you know, honestly, we have no idea. If we find a person, you know, dead in their bed the following morning, we have no idea if they had an interaction with a ghost or a shadow person. It's usually, you know, some sort of heart failure, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the physical encounters have not amounted to murders or killings. And, you know, and honestly, you know, shadow people get a bad rap because they're dark in color. You know, most shadow people, again, are just rather benign. They're standing there watching and observing. Those people that try to say that, you know, shadow people are the most evil of all evil entities and the darkest of the dark, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they're being very dramatic. Yes, there are shadow entities that are evil, nasty, and nefarious. I'm not going to deny that. I've been on those cases. But there are ones that are actually benevolent in nature, where they, you know, have done very helpful things for people. And again, most are just benign, standing there watching. It might creep you out, but they're not doing anything but being there, but existing. So it's something that I try to dispel in my book, A Walk in the Shadows. You know, each shadow person is different. They each have their own agendas. You know, very commonly get the question, you know, what is a shadow person? And they are a large variety of different things. Some are, you know, human spirits that can't fully manifest as an apparition. So instead of coming across as a white ghost, they don't have enough energy to manifest, and they just come off as a shadow. And I'm certainly not going to sit there and say somebody's Aunt Jane is evil. I think what a what kind of a quote unquote true shadow person is an interdimensional being, something that is come here from some other plane of existence. And you're still with me? Everything kind of went silent.
Say what?
Okay, I was just wondering if you're still with me. Everything kind of went very silent. Okay,
I'm listening. That's all right.
No, that's fine. So what I believe a true shadow person is an interdimensional being, something that's crossed over here from some other plane of existence. We don't necessarily know their agenda, why they're here. Some just really seem to be exploring, learning more about our environment. They may have other agendas as well. Some are extraterrestrials. They are ETs. You see a lot of similarities between extraterrestrial stories and shadow people stories. Some may be astral projections. Some may be time travelers. And I could go down a whole laundry list of different things that they possibly could be. So they're not just one thing. So when somebody, tells me, about an encounter or asks me about shadow people, we really have to get a lot of details to try to find out, okay, what exactly is this specific shadow person and what might its agenda possibly be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was thinking there were many types as well. And my guess was that most of them were benign because you don't hear horror stories about that. But then there are the scary ones, like the hat wearers or the hooded ones and the creepers. So we hear about that, and I guess, the umbrella falls, and then all shadow people are bad.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting. So, yeah, with the hat-wearing entities, more of them do seem to be of the nefarious kind. Again, not all. That you still have reports of some of the hat people just standing there watching and observing. But a lot of people will chalk them up to being energy vampires. They strike fear into you and feed off of that energy. There are also some of these hat people that they may not be shadow people at all. It might be something else. There's a fascinating story that I've enjoyed telling here over the last couple of years about Albert K. Bender. And he founded the International Flying Saucer Bureau in 1952, and it became so popular very quickly. It was basically international almost overnight. Where they had offices in the UK, in Australia. They were publishing newsletters and became very, very popular for its UFO research. Mm-hmm. But in 1953, a year later, boom, all of a sudden, Bender just disbanded the International Flying Saucer Bureau. And nobody knew why for years. And he wouldn't tell anybody what the real reason was. But then all of a sudden, in the early 1960s, he publishes a book, Flying Saucers and the Three Men, and tells what happened. And what had happened to him is, he had been visited by these three shadowy figures wearing hats with glowing eyes that materialized into his bedroom and told him that he had to stop his research on UFOs. Mm. And I'm listening to this story. And the first time I heard this story was on one of the UFO programs. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to the story. I'm like, wait a second. This is a shadow person story. This is like the same story I've heard over and over again from people that have described, the Hat Men. Mm-hmm. He believed that they were extraterrestrials, that they had told him he had to stop his research on UFOs. He believed that they told him he had to stop that they were there for 15 years and he couldn't say anything until they had left the planet. Mm-hmm. He believed that they were harvesting resources from the water in Antarctica. But other people, like the conspiracy theorists people, will listen to that story and believe that these were the Men in Black. Mm-hmm. So what were these people? Were they paranormal shadow people? Were they ETs? Were they the Men in Black? Who knows? But it's the same story across three different fields.
Yeah, well, I would say as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, talk about the Men in Black, huh? There must be. it was logical. What do you think is their purpose? And that's really a generic question and maybe impossible to answer, but, you know, I mean, ETs come down for a reason, ghosts come down for a reason, you know, so any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of what I was alluding to before is, you know, you need to try to find out, okay, what's the agenda of this particular, you know, shadow entity? You know, the ones that are just human spirits coming across as a shadow, you know, it's the same as kind of any haunting. You know, they're lingering within the house for some reason, whether they have some sort of unfinished business or they don't know how to cross over. My buddy Rob Guttrow tells a story about his aunt that appeared to him as a shadow that wanted him to deliver a message for her to his mother. So there you go. There's the purpose right there. Mm-hmm. I had a hypnosis session a few months ago about my first experience that I had as a child where it crossed my arms, across my body, because I wanted to know more about that particular incident. Right. And what I learned from that particular session was that it was not trying to scare me. And some people had tried to suppose that, okay, maybe with the arms crossing across my body, maybe it thought I was dead and was trying to put me into a burial pose, that sort of thing. So yeah, it had like all these different, you know, like the crook and flail, like the ancient Egyptian sarcophagi. Like we were talking about ancient Egypt earlier. So it's like, okay, that's an interesting idea, but did not have a straight answer. So, you know, hearing, okay, it didn't know that I could see it. And it was surprised when all of a sudden I'm sitting there trying to scream and realizing that, oh, I just scared a child. Mm-hmm. And so what it was doing when it crossed my arms across my body, it was almost kind of like trying to comfort me and have me like hug myself. And there was a vision from that hypnosis session where after it crossed my arms, it actually kind of patted me on the wrist, like, you know, it'll be okay sort of thing. And so the hypnotherapist was asking some questions within the session about, okay, you know, where did you come from? And it said, from another space. Of course, the follow-up is, you mean from another dimension? And the response was, well, we would call it a dimension, but it's really from basically some other space out in the universe. So kind of, you know, take that for what you will. But then the question, okay, what were you doing here? And what it was doing was exploring and trying to learn more about humankind. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to me. You know, obviously it sounds like, okay, this was an interdimensional being, you know, exploring the cosmos from whatever, you know, dimension or whatever they're calling the space, wherever that is, coming through to here, you know, discovering humans and then trying to learn more about us and not realizing, oh, they can actually kind of see us.
Yeah, big surprise.
Yeah.
So is it fairly common for people to encounter shadow people?
You know, a lot of people actually do. I have all kinds of people contact me about them. But, and of course, you know, people that are paranormal investigators that go to a haunted location, a lot of times, yeah, they see a shadow darting down the hall or maybe standing in a corner. But, you know, other people that, you know, have a little bit of something going on in their house will contact me, or, you know, maybe they saw something at a historic location, or maybe they were in the woods and saw something. They're a lot more common than I think people really believe they are.
Yeah, you might not think about it because, I mean, for years and years, I was always having, like, dark things going right out of my vision range, you know, but you see it and it just goes really quick. And I never thought about it being a shadow person. I thought it was just a spirit, you know, on his way in a hurry, boom, there you go.
And that's really an interpretation of our eyes, you know, of why we're seeing it as a shadow. Cause our eyes can only see a certain range of light, and basically a shadow is the occlusion of light. And what's, we talk about this in the docuseries, The Shadow Dimension. I have three different people, Mark Anthony, Mary Marshall, and Johnny Enoch, all talking about how the eyes work. And they talk about, you know, the rods and cones in the eyes, and how through the periphery we see into a little bit of a different range of light. So through the periphery, you know, we'll see somebody standing there, and then as we turn, that range of light that we're able to see into changes, because now we're looking at it straight on rather than the through the periphery. And so to us, it seems like it disappears, but really it's actually still there. We're just seeing that those different frequencies of light.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, they come in all shapes and sizes when they manifest, but I spoke to a friend years ago who was on an investigation at Waverly Hills, and he walked into a room, and he found this huge shadow, and the thing stood out most in his mind was that, unlike wispy ghosts and things like that that he was used to encounter, the shadow was totally solid. I mean, he shined a light on it, and the light kind of bounced off the shadow. And, you know, he thought that was pretty eerie. So, in your experience, are they all kind of that solidly solid? I think many of us have had really icky feelings when a ghost walks through us, but do you think a shadow person could ever walk through us like a ghost might?
Sure. What's interesting, when it comes to shadows, they do come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. So, that one is probably closer to what we would call the humanoid figure, because it's, you know, very solid. Sounds like it looks like a, you know, human figure. That's one kind. We talked about the hat people. There's the hooded figures, which are kind of a mixed bag. There are some that are nasty and some that are actually benevolent. Then there's what we call the mist. There's the wisp. There's the crawler. So they come in a lot of different shapes and sizes. Some are actually, you know, just very, very translucent. That would be like the wisp, and they move very, very fast.
Yeah.
So, like the one I saw when I was 13 years old, you could see the form of a person there standing in the doorway, and I saw him several times. But he was extremely translucent. So he was more of the wispy kind, and I got a really interesting look at one when I was investigating. It was Johnny V's, and it was an old restaurant in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And we were finishing up the investigation. A couple of guys were up in the bar area. A couple of others were out in the front dining room area. And I decided to do a last photo sweep of the restaurant. I walked through the main door to the kitchen and just saw this quick little, like I said, wisp of a shadow dart across the room. It was tall, very narrow, very, very translucent, but you could tell it was there, and it just poof, darted right across the room. What's interesting is you heard it boom, slam into the side door of the kitchen, which was just a little flimsy metal door that waiters and waitresses would use to carry large trays of food through. Mm-hmm. You could like tap that door with your finger, and it would open. It was that flimsy. But the door didn't move, which was really, really interesting. And that kind of led me down the path of researching, you know, are these things interdimensional beings? Because this seemed to be on some other plane of existence to be able to slam into the door like that, but not make it move. And I have a nice big section in the book, Walking the Shadows, on that whole theory and how I break that down.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. You know, and the friend of mine, I think what really got to him the most was when the flashlight bounced off of the shadow. You know, he just didn't expect that. He expected it to go through or whatever, but it he said it literally bounced kind of back. And he knew about shadow people, but apparently this was the first one he'd ever gotten really close to. And he said it just kind of freaked him out because he said it was just so black and so heavy looking that it was rather amazing. We got 2 minutes before the break, so let me ask you this. As a paranormal historian, I'm sure you've done a lot of research, and we've talked about shadow people showing up in hieroglyphs in Egypt. But how far back do sightings go in maybe the last couple hundred years? I mean, have they been in written history at all? I mean, is there a lot?
You see these throughout, you know, all time. You see them in all cultures, you know, for millennia. You know, they call them each a different name. They don't necessarily call them shadow people. There's a different name, legend, and lore surrounding it. But they're all talking about the same thing. For recent stories, you can look about 150 years ago to the spiritualism movement and Madame de Espérance, who was a physical medium, controversial figure back in her day. But she talks specifically using the terms shadow people. She grew up in a haunted house where it had both ghosts and shadows, and she was actually scared of the ghosts and would run to her shadow people friends for comfort and to protect her.
Wow.
She had, and what's interesting is years later, she had a bit of a different take because she grew up, got married, moved into a different house, and in that new house, it had shadow entities there that she did not like. So it's really, really interesting stories to kind of, and it really shows how, depending on the particular shadow, they're each different.
Yeah, and that's what's going to make it even harder to ever kind of put a label on them or whatever, because they are so many different things.
Yeah, absolutely. They really are. So that's why when somebody contacts me about shadow people asking, okay, what are these things? What did I see and experience? It's like, well, I need some more details here. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of break down what you experienced.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And everybody, just, turn on the lights if you're getting scared. And we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages. From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening in to Stirring the Cauldron. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up, if you don't already know, about the free weekly Witches Oracle Deck readings that I post on my website every Monday. Now, let me answer the age-old question before you ask it, which is, well, how do I know it's for me? And the answer is pretty simple. If you weren't meant to see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So if you're curious about what the week has in store for you, pop on over to marlabrooks.com every Monday and scroll down on the homepage, and there it will be.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, welcome back. My guest is Mike Ricksecker, and we're talking about his book, A Walk in the Shadows. And I just want to put a little aside. Earlier, it made me giggle during the break because Mike mentioned that he published one of my books. And all of a sudden, and I said, I don't really talk about them. And Sarge, who gets paid the big bucks for being this clever, grabbed the commercial and stuck it in the commercial break. So, Sarge, thank you. That was pretty cool. All right.
Yeah, it was nice to hear the commercial. That was great.
It was. It was surprised me because it just made me a liar. But okay, let me say, Sarge has carte blanche to put any commercials on he wants. I give him that. The break is his. And sometimes he does amazing things. And, well, he does amazing things a lot of the time because he's putting up with me all these years. But that was really nice. All right, so let's get back to some shadow people. We were talking, you mentioned a little bit, that a lot of times they're blank. They don't have features. But sometimes they have eyes. But I've never heard of one with a mouth. Do they make, well, you said kind of before that they talk to people. So they do make sounds, or they seem to be trying to communicate with people sometimes?
Well, when they communicate, yeah, that's kind of thing. They're shadows, so they don't have a mouth. They don't have a vocal box. The way that they communicate for, you don't hear a lot of stories about communication, but for the handful that that do exist, it seems to be some sort of telepathy or thought transference that that you'll hear their voice in your mind, sort of thing. So it's not common, but it does happen.
Yeah, yeah, because I've never heard that either, and it was just kind of like, that's kind of interesting. So a couple of weeks ago on the show, on my show, we were talking about sleep paralysis with a guest, as far as alien encounters are concerned. But you have a whole chapter discussing sleep paralysis, both medically and shadow people morphing into somebody's bedroom in the middle of the night. It's a topic that can boggle the mind, but it's not too uncommon, is it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole section in the book on sleep paralysis because it is a very common question, and there's a lot of misinformation about this as well. So, yeah, the medical community will say that what shadow people are basically hallucinations that you see from your dreams playing themselves out in your bedroom while you're experiencing sleep paralysis. Sleep paralysis is a real biological phenomenon. Definitely not going to say that it isn't, because I have experienced real sleep paralysis, although never during any of my shadow people encounters. Even that very first one when I was a child, I was not paralyzed during that. My mouth opened, obviously my arms moved, I was able to turn my head and watch the thing run down the hall. So I wasn't paralyzed during that incident, and obviously, you know, during the different paranormal investigations that I'd been on, and even that one that I saw when I was 13 years old, I was seeing it while we had moved into a new house, and I'm putting, you know, things away in my bedroom, and I'm seeing this thing. So it had nothing to do with sleep whatsoever. So people see shadow entities all the time. It's not always associated with sleep, but sometimes it is. You know, the body will, you know, basically paralyze you while you're sleeping so that you don't act out your dreams in the middle of the night. Completely natural. When it's happened to me, it's been the opposite, which is not as common, but it does happen, in which my body was so exhausted that I was awake at the time, and my body just shut down on me, but my mind was still awake, which is very, very scary and disconcerting, especially because it happened to me at work, and I was in the Air Force at the time, and you do not want to be caught sleeping while on the job while you're in the military. Not a good idea. It happens. But the problem being, of course, that, you know, the medical community will say, well, you're having this hallucination when you wake up. Well, here's my question back to the medical community. If it's a hallucination, why is it always a person that we're hallucinating? If this is our dream playing out in our bedroom, why is it always a person? Because we dream about all kinds of different things. We might be dreaming about cars or trains or airplanes. There'll be trees or bushes in our dreams. You might be, you know, in a different house altogether in your dream. I've had dreams of being on stage with Motley Crue, and I've never woken up to, you know, 10,000 people in my room, pyrotechnics going off, and you know, the guitars. I mean, it'd be fun, right? It'd be a lot of fun, but it doesn't happen. People always end up seeing this figure. So what exactly is going on here? I believe that these are two different phenomena: sleep paralysis and shadow people. Sleep paralysis being a real biological phenomenon, and shadow entities being a real paranormal phenomenon, happening at the same time. They're two different phenomena that can happen at the same time. And what I'd like to point out here, okay, what's going on when this happens? And people who've had small children will relate to this. in that, you know, a lot of times you'll have a child wake up in the middle of the night and they'll come up to the bed. A lot of times they will, you know, kind of tap you on the shoulder or shake you and say, hey, you know, I need to go to the bathroom or, you know, need to get a drink of water or whatever. And you go and take care of it. But sometimes, and my youngest son Cameron was notorious for this, sometimes they don't. And they just stand there and they stare at you until you wake up. And like I said, my son Cameron was notorious for this. So all of a sudden, I just wake up and there he'd be standing next to bed and be, oh my God, Cameron, what are you doing? It was very, very creepy. And he would say, you know, I need to go to the bathroom or I need a drink of water or I had a bad dream or whatever it is. And we would take care of it. But okay, so what is it that woke me up? Mm-hmm. Well, his presence obviously woke me up. Him being next to the bed there, that I could feel his presence. We each have a toroidal field of energy around us that extends out several feet. And so when his field of energy crossed mine, I could feel that. I could sense it. And that's what woke me up. Same thing with shadow entities. They also have their own energy field around them. And what's waking us up is we're feeling their presence. We're feeling their energy in the room. And so we wake up. We see them there. Sometimes we have sleep paralysis that goes along with it. Now, all of a sudden, what our experience is, oh my gosh, there's an intruder in the room. We don't immediately think shadow person. Most of the time we're thinking when we see a figure in the room, there's somebody, a person standing there. So we're thinking there's an intruder in the room. Oh my gosh, I can't move. Now I'm getting scared and frightened. The adrenaline's rushing. And it's just like this huge snowball effect. So that's basically how I've broken that down into the book. That's kind of the short of it. Two different types of phenomenon that can happen at the same time.
Okay, and you were just talking about feeling somebody standing there, or a sensitive will or a medium will on an investigation feel spirit around. Mm-hmm. Have you talked to people who said that they kind of get the same vibes when they're around shadow people? Do they give off some kind of vibe like a spirit might?
Well, yeah, and especially, you know, I mean, people will recognize, you know, the feel of a human spirit, and that might come off as an apparition or it might come off as a shadow visually, but, you know, they're feeling the same type of energy because it's the energy of a human being, or if it's something else, they may feel that type of energy. So whether it's something interdimensional or it could be demonic, I mean, I've been on one case over all the years, one case that was actually a demonic shadow entity case. And so that had an entirely different feel to it. So yeah, you can get a, you know, specific feeling. But that doesn't necessarily mean, okay, I have the sense of a shadow person here. You have the sense of you know, the more of like the type of what I mean, not shadow or apparition, but type of, is this an evil person? Is this just somebody's, you know, Aunt Mary or what have you? You know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in shadows, photos that we've seen, they've mostly been of humanoid figures or, as you said, you know, sometimes blobs and something. But to your knowledge, I mean, they always look like men when they're humanoid in thing. Do you ever hear people talk about shadow women or shadow children, or why is it always a shadow man?
Yeah, you know, it's very sexist, isn't it? A shadow man. Yeah, because it could be a shadow woman, especially the ones that are human spirits. Like, the example I gave earlier with Rob, it was his aunt that appeared to him as a shadow. So it could certainly be a woman. And we just see a humanoid figure. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell, you know, because you're just seeing the outline. You know, sometimes they wear the clothing, like the hats or the capes or whatever. You know, one incident by Eric Gerard that's in the book, he woke up to basically the old hag sitting on his chest. It's like she was all in a shadowy form, but he could see, you know, that outline of her. He could see the long stringy hair, but just as a shadow form. And he was actually able to physically throw her off of his chest. She was sitting there in the chest, the whole old hag syndrome thing. Mm-hmm. And he was able to throw her off. So, people do see, the form of a woman sometimes. Shadow children, yes. People have reported seeing shorter shadow entities. One specifically that's in the book, it's at a old grade school in Kempfville, Illinois. And it's a capture of mine in which we did a height comparison, going back to the location, because it's actually a piece of video footage. And, it's about the height of a 10 or 11 year old child, which makes sense being that it was an old school. So you do hear from time to time, I think the common nomenclature is shadow man, but you do get women, you do get children. There are shadow pets as well.
Oh, I'd like to have a shadow pet. You didn't have to clean up after it, and it wouldn't throw up hairballs or pee on the rug. That might not be such a bad thing.
Yeah, not too bad.
All right. So one of the chapters in your book, just absolutely, my eye went right to it because I'm a little strange at times. Things that are quirky catch me. Let's talk about the WTF shadows. You have a whole chapter about WTF shadows. So you want to explain what your WTF file is comprised of and maybe talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, the WTF file, it's just stuff that just doesn't make any sense. You don't know where to, really put it. Because, as humans, we tried to, categorize and compartmentalize everything. And so, the whole front of the book, goes through, the different types. Again, the humanoid figure, the hat people, and splitting it up like that. But you get these descriptions of, or is it Madison Seminary? It was a gorilla type looking shadow entity. It was somewhat human in form, somewhat gorilla in form. It was just totally bizarre. Or one that looked kind of like a gnome, but had a crescent moon shaped head. It was but it was a shadow. And crossing the hall of this one woman's house into her son's room. And so she, of course, got scared and ran into the room, but didn't see it. But she had seen it cross the hall. So it's just, some of the descriptions of where in the world do you even put that? So it's the WTF file.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking back, and there was something about a person seeing a short shadow person with a pointy head and a pointy chin, and it sounded kind of dwarf-like.
Right, exactly.
It's just, I suppose, if you're, we don't know what shadow people are made up of, but if we could kind of shapeshift, and maybe they do, I don't know, you can answer that question in a minute, maybe they can look at anything they want. I mean, they could see something, suppose they showed up in somebody's bedroom and they had a crescent moon lamp or something, or, whatever. I wonder if they could shift into something like that they could see.
I mean, that's possible, if they're a shape-shifting type of entity. These could also be, we have all kinds of legend and lore from our history that talk about, these different strange entities, whether they're gnomes or leprechauns or fairies, and, these could be some of those types of entities that are still around today that we don't normally see. And, we kind of see it morphing into our plane of existence for a split second. And that could be, where they got these stories from long ago, because they actually did see something back in the day and they didn't understand what they were looking at. So they created a story to go around it.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit earlier also, you were talking about they're not always bad. Some of them are benevolent. Do you have any samples of maybe what one or two have done to try to help somebody or heal somebody that?
Absolutely. So one of the stories that I tell is, it was a hooded shadow figure that she originally thought that it was a harbinger of death, and because she kept seeing this figure go into her young son's bedroom. And he was very ill. They weren't really sure what was wrong with him. The doctors had a initial diagnosis that they knew was incorrect. They were treating for it anyway because they didn't know what else it could possibly be. And it just wasn't working. And so she kept seeing this hooded shadow figure go into her son's room. And so she thought that, you know, any day, you know, her son was going to go. So they're back at the doctor's office, and the doctor's saying they're going to run through the same tests again. And just before they're about to get up to leave to go do the test, all of a sudden he turns his head as if somebody's speaking into his ear. And he turns back around and says, you know what? Let's actually run these other tests first for this, you know, other type of disease. And sure enough, it was this other disease that he had. It was treatable. The boy is fine to this day. And they never saw the hooded shadow figure again. And the mother believes that what was going on was the hooded shadow figure was there to figure out what was wrong with the boy. And once he figured it out, he was there in the room with the doctor, even though they couldn't see him, but was the was the entity that was whispering into the doctor's ear to tell him to run these other tests.
And that leads to the question, how did the shadow person actually be in that room and know that that boy was ill? Is there maybe some kind of connection between them and us and we don't know about it?
Yeah, did they have some sort of, you know, technology that determined that? You know, was it a feeling? We have no idea. We have no idea how it was able to diagnose and then give the solution to the doctor. So
it's kind of amazing. And a lot of, you know, people say that ETs are scary and they're going to eat you alive. The grays are going to nibble on your toes and all that stuff. But there are lots of cases of that kind of healing going on in that respect too. So maybe this was, you know, one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not all ETs are evil, nasty, and nefarious either. You're going to get a mix. You know, on all these different, regarding all these different realms, whether it's the ETs, whether it's interdimensional, whether it's on some other spiritual plane, you're going to have both good and evil. You're going to have a yin to the yang and all that.
Yep.
It's always there, no matter which realm you're talking about. So, you know, not all ETs are evil, nasty, and nefarious. Not all of them are good either. Same thing with shadow entities or other interdimensional beings. Some are going to be good, some are going to be bad. Just like with humans, we have some good humans, we have some bad humans. So it goes both ways, and you have to, you know, look at each individual entity and try to evaluate. Okay, what is it that I'm dealing with here? Is this something good or something bad?
Mm-hmm. Well, everything has a duality. You can't have light without dark. You can't have the sun without the moon or the stars or all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, people are easy to talk about, like, black magic. You know, black magic is black and white magic is white. And you know what? It's gray. It's not one or the other. It's whoever's doing it. And, you know, the same thing goes for people.
What's the intention?
It's the intention. It's your mind, what you're thinking about. The way you were raised. I mean, I don't know, you know. I think people that live in a black and white world are not really getting the most out of life, you know. I mean, that's got to be kind of boring when you just follow the rules and say this is impossible and that's impossible, because I don't think anything is pretty impossible. I mean, you know, we just haven't seen it happen, but everything could be possible too.
Yeah, all right, one more. The only thing that's limiting us are our own minds.
That's yes. It. Yeah, or if we listen to other people. You know, make up your own mind. You know, if somebody, I love hearing things from other people. Some things I agree with, sometimes I don't, but it's nice to hear both sides. Doesn't mean I believe or disbelieve, but we learn from that, you know. We learn maybe, well, don't listen to that person anymore, he's nuts. But you know how it goes. I mean, it works that way. All right, so the question from the chat room, and you kind of touched on this already, but she said, how many people have touched a shadow person or apparition that you know about?
You know, obviously I had one touch me. Out of all of my experiences, that's really the one significant one that touched me. Now, I've been on paranormal investigations where you might get a little poke or a prod or like, it feels like something just, you know, brushed by me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are several cases of this. It's not rare, but it's not very common. It happens sometimes, you know,
mm-hmm.
where they or they might poke or prod you. And sometimes you don't quite understand that either, you know, or some of these, you know, people will be like, you know, something pushed me, it must be evil, or something, you know, scratched me, it must be evil. And it's like, well, maybe they're just trying to tap you on the shoulder, didn't realize their own strength or their own energy, and it was kind of an accident. They were just trying to say hello, you know.
No, that's possible. And, you know, I guess it's people have to make up their own minds about what's going on. And I'm wondering, too, you know, like for so many years, people were afraid to say, I saw a ghost or I saw an apparition and whatever. Do you think people now are kind of being that same way about shadow people just because they can't exactly explain what they're seeing?
Well, I think they're becoming more open to it for sure. And that's, you know, one of the great things that has come about since the mid-1990s as the, you know, internet started to get bigger and people were starting to connect and realize that there are other people out there having the same experiences. And then the television shows came out and they helped with that as well. I'm mixed on the television shows because, you know, there are certain things that get, you know, blown way out of proportion or, you know, some things are fabricated, but they've done a lot actually to help people realize there are others out there that have had these same experiences. I'm not alone. And, you know, people have been over the last 25 years more open to sharing their stories and experiences. So I'll get asked a lot, you know, do you see that, you know, more people are starting to, you know, tell these stories. It seems like, you know, things are more active these days. You know, is there more going on in the world? Is there, you know, are ghosts and shadow people and, you know, all these interdimensional beings, are they more active these days? Are there more crawlers these days? And it's like, well, take it into context. You know, like we just said, people are more comfortable telling that story now, where 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they weren't going to say a thing because they would have been cut off from the community, laughed at, ridiculed. Some would end up in a psychiatric facility, so they weren't going to say a thing about it. There's also more people in the world these days, too, so you're going to hear more stories. So,
well, I think it's cathartic, too. You know, you don't want to hold that in. You know, something like that, you have to tell somebody, but now you're not so afraid. And if people now that are listening decide that they really have a story to tell and they don't know who to tell, get a hold of Mike.
There you go.
There you go. All right, we got a couple of minutes, so tell everybody where they can find you, what you're up to, your books, your shows, you know. Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely pick up the book, A Walk in the Shadows, A Complete Guide to Shadow People. It talks about everything that we've been talking about this evening. Also, check out the docuseries, The Shadow Dimension. It just came out a couple months ago. It's free to watch on Tubi TV. So, I mean, that's an app you can load up on your smart TV or your Roku, or you can go straight to their website and watch it for free out there. Several other sites have it as well, like Vimeo or Cosm or Zuzu's. But if you want to watch it for free, that's check it out at Tubi TV. It's called The Shadow Dimension. So we go to the Conjuring House, go to Mineral Springs Hotel, looking for shadow phenomenon, and you know we get into a lot of what we were just talking about this evening with how they may be traveling interdimensionally into our world and the history behind it and all that great stuff. You can also find me at MikeRicksecker.com and ConnectedUniversePortal.com. That is a new learning site that I've put together here over the last several months. We have weekly classes. I've got all kinds of videos and articles out there. We do a monthly Q&A video for people. I have a fantastic Egypt travel blog that's out there with all kinds of videos. So you definitely check that out. That's ConnectedUniversePortal.com.
Nice. All right. Well, Mike, when you get some Egyptian stuff put together and stuff, maybe you'd like to come back and talk about that because it's so historical and so interesting that, you know, we could do that. All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's always a pleasure having you stop by. And I want to thank everybody for listening as well, whether it's live or podcasted. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.